a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The House Commerce and Energy Committee will now come to order. I'd like to greet those who are with us here today, as well as those listening on the Internet. I'd like to also remind everyone here in the committee room to make sure your cell phones are turned to silent or off, along with any other electronic devices you may have with you. And with that, I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Cummock.
Here.
Cronin. Greenfield.
Here.
Kirschman.
Here.
Miller. Nelson.
Here.
Parsley.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rounds.
Here.
Stalzer.
Here.
Westra.
Here.
Consett. And Solem.
Here.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum with the majority of the members elect present. At this time, I'd entertain a motion for approval in the minutes.
Second.
That motion by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Westra. All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes have been approved. We have two pages this morning, and I'd like for you to come up to the microphone and introduce yourself, please. Who's going first? And that microphone is always on.
All right. My name is Savannah Johnson, and I'm a senior at Spearfish High School.
Welcome.
Hello. I'm Stephanie Garcia from Watertown. I go to Great Plains. I'm a senior as well.
Awesome. Welcome. Also remind you that if you have anything to distribute to the committee members, make sure you use our pages, and we appreciate their help here this morning. Thank you. Looking at our agenda, the chair is going to make one modification. I will move 195 up to the number 2 position on our agenda, and that would put 157 in the number 3 spot. The other day, we had a minor infraction of our committee rules, and a cell phone went off during one of our bill hearings, and Senator Johnston sends over beef jerky with his sincere apologies and his regards to our committee members. So prior to you leaving today, help yourself. All right. Yes, Representative Parsley.
Could we maybe have a point of order on that one? And someone from the other side, shouldn't it be jumbo jerky instead?
Very, very good point. I'll pass along your comments. Good point. Real good point. Okay. Let's get down to work. The first item on our agenda would be Senate Bill 75. I'll now open up the hearing on Senate Bill 75, which is an act to adopt updated guidelines for the evaluation of permanent impairment in connection with workers' compensation claims. And with that, I would open proponent testimony to Senate Bill 75. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Scott Munsterman, Representative of District 7. Essentially, what this does is it upgrades the guidelines that are used for impairment rating for workers' compensation. Currently, we have been using the fourth edition back in 2007. The sixth edition came out, and with each edition, and it goes back to when I started practice almost 30 years ago, we were using the third edition, and it's interesting to look back over time, even though it may show some of my age, at how these guidelines have changed over time to better define the diagnosis of that patient that's been injured, but then to be able to help predict what does that actually mean in terms of impairment. And with the sixth edition, what it takes into consideration is really a better evidence-based approach and more of an outcomes-based approach. It doesn't mean anymore that, you know, if you do have surgery that you automatically have an impairment, but rather it tests what is the function, was it restorative or not, and then how did that actually turn out? Is there any disability really associated with that? And so It's diagnosis-based, similar to the fourth edition, but it takes it a step further. It helps define classes of impairments, providing functional self-assessment. measurements in addition to the physical exam findings and any imaging and electrodiagnostic studies that would become a part of that overall impairment process. And so, again, it's really just an update of that is consistent with clinical practice that we have seen with understanding more about conditions and injuries and what are the ramifications and how to restore and rehabilitate those injuries and the success that we have, and it's a better judgment of exactly what the impairment is and just another refining, and I would urge your passage of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Additional proponent testimony to Senate Bill 75.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota State Medical Association. The American Medical Association actually puts these guidelines out, and what this does is bring it up to 2007 was the last one with a reprint in 2009, which was already mentioned. But I just wanted to add that if there's ever opposition to this, it's usually because it's increased cost. In this case, there is no increased cost. And the Work Comp Advisory Committee has voted unanimously to support this. And there is no cost. And as Representative Munsterman said, the diagnostics, the outcomes, and the quality of assessment is much better. So we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Krogman. Additional proponent testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm James Marsh, Director of the Division of Labor and Management in the State Labor and Regulation Department. We also support the bill and encourage your support. Thanks. We'll remain available for questions.
Additional proponent testimony. Proponent testimony for Senate Bill 75. Seeing no further proponents, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 75? Opponents? Seeing no opponents, I would close the public testimony portion and open it up for committee questions. Representative Parsley?
Just a clarification question. I see that this was amended in the Senate. It looks like two different sections of the code were needed. Would we dismiss the first time? Is that? Thank you.
That was an affirmative response. Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, I'll close the question portion and open it up for committee discussion or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Konzit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move due pass on Senate Bill 75.
Second.
The motion is due pass on Senate Bill 75 by Representative Konzit, seconded by Representative Westra. Did you have any comments?
I have no, sir.
Any other comments? Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back in, I think it was 07, I think I had to carry this bill, and they made me explain the whole addition up on the floor. And I'm kind of been hoping to hear that this morning, but let's move the bill along. Thank you.
Very good. Any other comments?
Other than that comment wasn't necessary.
Seeing no further comments, the motion at hand is due pass on Senate Bill 75. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kamak.
Aye.
Cronin. Greenfield.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Miller. Nelson.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye.
Stalzer.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Konzit.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
We had 11 yeas, 2 excused.
Second. Having received the majority of the vote to the members-elect, Senate Bill 75 passes. And that motion for consent by Representative Rounds, seconded by Representative Konzit. All in favor of that motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate Bill 75 is now on our consent calendar. Well, that was short and sweet. Hopefully the next one will be the same. With that, the chair is going to pass the gavel.
We'll now open the hearing on Senate Bill 195, Senate Bill, 195, an act to make certain form and style changes. Oh, I'm on the wrong bill. I'm on Senate Bill 55. Excuse me.
Pull it up. An act to establish certain incentives for wind energy facilities to revise the amount that they may be rebated for the gross receipts tax on electricity produced on wind farms and to declare an emergency. Representative, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, ladies and gentlemen, many of you know, and for those that don't know, a couple years ago, Representative Roger Solem, District 5, Coddington County. I better get my process in order here. Many of you know that a couple of years ago, not this past summer, but the summer before, I was the chair of the South Dakota Wind Energy Competitive Advisory Task Force. And what we were looking at is how we can make wind development more attractive in the state of South Dakota. And essentially, I'm not going to go through all of the proceedings, but we had input from not only our state government, but industry. And essentially, the outcome of our task force, we had basically three things that are slowing down or stopping the wind energy development in South Dakota. Number one was a production tax credit on the federal level. Number two was the access to transmission, getting our energy out of the state and to customers. And number three had to do with our tax structure here in the state of South Dakota. Well, over the last couple of years, of course, the production tax credit has been reinstated at the federal level. There are significant transmission projects now either happening or under development in and around the state of South Dakota. But the third thing, and it still is a hindrance, is our tax structure here in the state. And last year, over 13,000 megawatts of wind generation was installed in the United States. However, none of that wind was built in South Dakota. And for all intents and purposes, the wind development has totally stalled here in our state. And despite our excellent wind resources, I think by most accounts it's number four, we're number four in the nation for quality wind. The developers are telling us that our tax structure in South Dakota, it puts them at a competitive disadvantage. The few incentives that South Dakota had in place have now expired, and they did expire on the last day of December of this past year. And so therefore, we are no longer an attractive place for wind energy development. Over a 20-year project life, a 100-megawatt wind project can expect to pay roughly $25 million in taxes. A comparable project in North Dakota would only pay $9 million. And for a 100-megawatt wind project, some $7 to $11 million of upfront taxes are paid during the development and before the project is even producing any revenue or generating electricity. And in contrast, North Dakota has exempted wind projects from sales tax, and the remaining taxes are paid from ongoing revenue after the project is operating. And it's pretty clear that if we want to keep South Dakota open for business for wind energy development, we need to make some changes. And Senate Bill 195 is a good start on that. 195 would provide for a state incentive payment to the wind farm developers to essentially refund some of the upfront taxes. And in return for these upfront tax incentives, there would be an increase in the ongoing taxes that wind farms pay after they begin commercial operation. And essentially, this it would recapture at the tail end much of the upfront incentives over the course of 10 years. And the South Dakota Wind Energy Association initially brought this concept forward and worked with the governor's office to improve it and amend it in committee. And additional amendments have been coordinated with the governor's office. In conclusion, let's keep South Dakota open for business to wind energy development, and let's keep renewable energy as part of our state's energy future. I urge your support of Senate Bill 195, and I'll stand by for questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Welcome, Mr. Saar.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Chairwoman. I appreciate it. Members of the committee. And I want to thank Representative Solem for doing a very good job setting the stage on the need for Senate Bill 195. My name is Bob Saar. I'm a registered lobbyist and general counsel for East River Electric based in Madison, South Dakota. And East River Electric Power Cooperative is a wholesale power supplier for the rural electric cooperatives in eastern South Dakota and western Minnesota. We also are a member of the State Wind Energy Association, and I'm authorized to make some comments on behalf of the State Wind Energy Association's Executive Director, Ron Rabinich, who is not available today, but has been working very closely on this issue with everyone that's worked on 195. At the outset, I really do want to give a great thanks to Senator Roden and Representative Solem for their efforts. And these are a couple of legislators that know the wind business very, very well, and they bring a lot of very solid experience to this discussion. I also want to just emphasize the tremendous working relationship we've had with the administration, Chief of Staff Dusty Johnson, a number of the cabinet members, Hunter Roberts, and really a smart group of staff who have helped get 195 into what we think is a very strong form. You know, we're waiting to see what will happen in terms of the broader economic development bill that was heard in House State Affairs this morning, SB 235. The association and its members feel strongly that 195 should go forward that it still has its place until that point in time where it no longer does have its place. So with that, I just want to briefly mention a couple additional points, and I know Chief of Staff Dusty Johnson is going to talk about some amendments and get into some of the specifics of the bill, but I think Representative Solem did an excellent job laying out the tax challenge that we have in South Dakota. And he talked about the overall taxes. As you probably are well aware, upfront taxes are a big challenge for business as well. And if you compare South Dakota under its current law right now, we are probably 5 to 6 times higher in terms of upfront taxes compared to our neighboring states. And that, frankly, is putting a chilling effect on development in this part of in our state. There's some great opportunity out there. The need for electricity and new generation sources continues on. The federal tax incentive was recently put back into place for wind projects, and likely that will end up being phased out over time. But even with the phase out, I think we can say with confidence that renewables are here to stay, and in particular wind is considered to be one of the resources that utilities should look at, and particularly with partnered with natural gas, it makes a lot of sense for the consumers in this part of the country. And thankfully, in South Dakota and the neighboring states, we have just absolutely tremendous wind power potential. As Representative Solem mentioned, we're the number four in terms of overall potential for wind, and we want to see that happen, that development occurring in South Dakota. There's also going to be some opportunities for export that will be coming up. There's more and more a push to look at energy production on a regional basis and to look at the potential to move wind or any energy resources along long distances. So the opportunity is there for South Dakota wind farms not just to serve the consumers in this state and region, but hopefully in those all the way off to those faraway states where maybe they don't have the same level of resources in terms of wind as we do in this state. And I think we've just touched upon, scratched the surface. We've done a great job building wind in South Dakota, but I think the potential there is huge. But we need to put some meaningful incentives in place. Senate Bill 195 does do that. And, we'll talk a lot about the upfront taxation, and I would expect a little bit on the backside. But I do want to state that wind, a typical wind farm, does pay significant ongoing taxes on an annual basis. So a wind farm, which of a typical size that we look at for commercial development, might be around 100 megawatts. Or a little bit bigger, maybe a little less. But that type of wind farm is probably paying somewhere in the ballpark on an average annual basis of around $1 million or more in taxes. So, you know, while we're focused, rightfully so, at some targeted upfront incentives, the ongoing taxes are very significant. And I think that the neat thing about 195 is there's an opportunity to look at those ongoing taxes as a way to recapture some of the upfront breaks that the industry and the folks supporting this bill think we need to have to be competitive with those neighboring states. So with that, Madam Chairwoman, I would be happy to answer any questions at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Mr. Johnson, proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Dusty Johnson. I serve as Chief of Staff to Governor Dennis Dugard. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to speak first to the bill and then to the amendments, if I could.
Proceed.
Great. Well, in life, it is good to play to your advantages. The best businesses, the best people identify what they're good at or what they can be really good at, and then they spend some time becoming even better in those areas of natural skill and advantage. And, of course, in South Dakota, we do a lot of things well. We've got good, honest people. We've got hardworking folks. And we've got a great ag industry. We also have a lot of wind. And that's really where Senate Bill 195 comes in. Energy development has been a focus of our governor and of our legislature because we've got a lot of wind and because the development of wind power is good for this state. And unfortunately, because of some sunset rebate provisions in our tax code, right now we are not a very hospitable place for wind energy development. Our tax structure is indeed a barrier, and in fact our upfront tax burden is more than three times, say that again, our upfront tax burden is more than three times what you would see in North Dakota or Minnesota or Iowa for a wind project. And so under the current tax regime, it's really hard to imagine any major wind development coming to South Dakota in the foreseeable future. And wind projects that never come to South Dakota create no jobs, and wind projects that never come to South Dakota create no new taxes, you know, to help fund the things that state government needs to do. And so the governor's office worked closely with supporters of the bill to draft the amendment. And you've got it in front of you, two amendments. The first is 195JC, and the other is 195JTC, which is simply a title amendment. Now, the amendments collectively really do three things. The first is they make a number of minor technical adjustments, clarifying wording, making sure legally we're saying what we want to say. Those changes were done because of suggestions from the Department of Revenue or from the industry or from other legislative stakeholders we've been working with. The second thing that the amendments do really add a great deal of additional simplicity to the bill. What do I mean by that? Well, you'll see about halfway down 195JC, it says delete page 6. And the line above that and the line below that do the same thing, which is simply take out kind of a complicated tiering system we had in the bill and replace it simply with rounding down to the nearest $1 million and then taking the incentive payment percentage times that rather than mess around with these tiers. The third thing, and really the only substantive thing that the amendments do, are to change the size of the incentive payment, the refund payment. And the reason that's done is we really have, it's part of a negotiation. We've been listening a lot to the folks in the wind industry, and the 2% number that the administration had initially inserted into the bill was simply not going to move the chains enough to make a difference. And at some point, if we're going to change our tax structure so that we can be a hospitable place for development, we want to make sure we're doing it enough so that we actually get that development we're seeking. 2%, we were brought around to being convinced that it wasn't enough. So the bill, the amendment would call for 2.75% of those project costs that are defined in the bill. So with that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we would just ask you to support both the both amendments as well as support the bill, and we're happy to stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Proponent testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brett Kennecke. I'm a lawyer from Pierre and a registered lobbyist for Iberdrola Renewables. Iberdrola Renewables is one of the world's largest developers of wind energy, and we have a number of projects both in place and in development on the eastern seaboard of the state, trending from Brookings northward. Well, there's the river over there. 195 is an important bill and has taken on importance for a lot of reasons, most of which have been detailed to you by the chairman of the committee and by Bob Saar and by Dusty Johnson this morning. I agree with everything they've said. They've been watching this issue for a long period of time, as have I, and pushing this matter forward. 195 has taken on a substantial bit more importance, though, this during this session and since its introduction with the announcement of the Excel RFP. Excel has put out an RFP for a substantial number of megawatts of wind energy, and there's a tremendous amount of competition right now between the states for that. It's an open secret, I think, that North Dakota is pushing very, very hard to have that wind energy installed up in that state. And as people are looking at that, people are looking for certainty in South Dakota as to what the tax treatment of wind energy is going to be going forward. A number of you are aware that there's a proposal that's on Senate Bill 235. It was heard this morning in House State Affairs. And it would be a tremendous amount of concern to me that the startup of 235, I was a proponent of 235 this morning, and I would still be a proponent. However, I don't know that it's going to be timely enough to meet the needs in order for people to compete for that Xcel Energy RFP. So I would ask you to give favorable consideration to this bill again this morning and to give consideration to the thought that maybe we need both of these pieces in order to move forward. I don't know that they're competing against each other, and that might be a decision for other people to make, but as I look at them, I think they're bills that can coexist. 195, I am a proponent of 195. I will state, however, that the assignability of as you look at page 4, section 4, lines 3 through 8, that creates a bit of a problem for us, and I don't have a fix for it here this morning. I'm not sure exactly how to fix that, but we'll be working on that as it moves forward. A number of you are familiar with the notion of production tax credits and how the PTC had to be renewed by Congress in order for wind energy development to go forward. Part of capturing the production tax credit is taking your wind energy project and putting it into an entity so that people can own that and utilize the tax collection or the production tax credits. And so without assignability of the payment going forward, that might cause some difficulties, and I would expect to work with the proponents further on how to fix that. So you might be looking for more still amendments on 195 going forward. With that said, I'm a proponent of this bill. I think it's incredibly important. I appreciate very much the work that the administration and the Wind Energy Association have put into it, and I think with a few tweaks it can be really positive for South Dakota. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir, for the proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Proponent, welcome, Mr. Van Camp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Van Camp. I'm a registered lobbyist for NextEra. I'm also a lawyer here in Pierre. I want to thank the chair for pointing out some of the information that was produced in the Wind Energy Task Force that was put together by this body 2 years ago. It's been an important recognition, I believe, by this legislature and the people that put in that effort and the people now here standing supporting 195 that South Dakota does stand at a competitive disadvantage to its neighbors. NextEra, the company I represent, built the first large-scale project in South Dakota, that being the Hyde County Wind Farm, and has two other large-scale projects. But the number of projects that NextEra has built, and NextEra is a competitive company in North Dakota, leave that state with upwards of $1 billion more of investment being placed in that jurisdiction. And that state, North Dakota, gets to reap the tax benefits. Representative Solem, the chair, pointed out the amount of money that is generated in taxes by these projects once they're placed in South Dakota. Now, if 10 projects do not come to South Dakota but instead are spread around to our neighboring jurisdictions, the state of South Dakota loses forever the opportunity to capture those tax dollars. Of course, we will always produce more wind energy than we need in South Dakota because of our population, but with the exciting changes, I think, that we're seeing in the industry coming coming forward, that opportunity to export what we do have here, which is a great wind resource to the region, comes with the benefit, if we capture it, of harnessing a broader tax base through the production taxes that these wind farms pay. And so in that vein, NextEra supports 195 as an effort to make South Dakota more competitive with its regional neighbors in the siting of these large-scale projects. And I would be available for any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir, for the proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Excuse me. My name is Darla Pullman Rogers. I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Rural Electric Association, and that's a statewide association that provides support for all of the South Dakota Rural Electric cooperatives in South Dakota. Our members also include East River Electric and Basin Electric of North Dakota. I would tell you that South Dakota Rural Electric cooperatives have invested nearly $1 billion in infrastructure in the state of South Dakota during the past decade. We support wind energy development. We believe that incentives make a difference. They influence the timing, the size, and in particular, the location of future investments. We believe that South Dakota needs to be more competitive for wind energy development. Senate Bill 195 is good economic development policy. It's good for SDREA and our members, and it's good for the infrastructure that results from economic incentives. We recognize as well that there are other legislative developments that have been occurring even as early or as recently as this morning, and that may result in some changes to this bill as it moves through the system. But nevertheless, we would urge you to move 195 forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your proponent testimony. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Julie Johnson. I represent Absolutely Aberdeen, a growth initiative in Northeast South Dakota, and also rise to speak on behalf of the Aberdeen Development Corporation. I am their registered lobbyist as well. We did support 195 as it came through the Senate, and we're thankful that the Wind Energy Association and the sponsors brought it for you. Let me take just a second to make a couple of comparisons to Senate Bill 235, which you will also get to visit such subjects tomorrow, I believe, on the House floor. I've been a little more deeply involved in the construction of that one after the bipartisan talks than normal, so I can give you a couple of points of comparison or contrast. Senate Bill 235 would begin with projects of April 1 of this year or after. We're hoping that that can remain in that bill because we know there are projects ready to build when the weather gets a little better. And so that might help us out in supporting the wind energy industry. I should also fully disclose to you that Aberdeen is the situs of considerable job creation in the wind manufacturing side of the house. Molded fiberglass companies chose Aberdeen about 5 years ago now, and we're very pleased to have them as a good corporate citizen in our community. They manufacture the giant wind turbine blades, and they send them all over the world through their exclusive customer, GE. Senate Bill 235, in my opinion, also includes the manufacturing side of these industries as well. This bill, as it currently exists, is more toward the wind projects themselves. 235 also then would assist in the equipment replacement of projects of over 2 million or more that have to replace their equipment, which is a huge thing for many manufacturers, but including the wind energy industry on the manufacturing side of the house. Every time the wind energy industry develops a longer, faster wind blade, molded fiberglass gets to change its molds. They are at about $3 million a piece. They are in the process of replacing four of those as we speak. Now, the timing of this bill will not be of benefit to them, and I want to make a full disclosure about that. 235 also slightly changes the structure for how these payments would be handled and treats it more as a reinvestment. But nonetheless, 195 as it exists today is deserving of your favorable consideration. And at the end of the day, we're hoping that the wind energy industry in total gets a great boost from the South Dakota legislature, plus a lot of other industries and community development needs as well. With that, I'll stand by for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. For the proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195.
Good morning, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm Dick Howard with the South Dakota Association of Towns and Townships. The townships support rural development, including wind development, but we have one major problem that crops up in some of these wind farms and others, and that has to do with maintenance and repair of access roads. There are many cases that the road maintenance requirements far exceed the amount of tax revenue that is made available to the townships. And so there have been cases where townships have had to opt out of the property tax program just to get additional money to maintain the roads for the wind farms. But and we with Senate Bill 195, we understand it's necessary to give incentives to get wind farm development, and we fully support that. Also, in Senate Bill 195, there is Section 16 of the bill does some reallocation of the wind energy tax that would benefit townships and provide additional funds for maintaining the roads. So we support 195, and we very much would like to see Section 116 remain as part of the bill, as it's very important for maintaining our rural roads that support the wind farms. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Proponent? Seeing none, opponent testimony on Senate Bill 195. Opponent testimony? Going once? Since there's no opponent testimony, I will waive your right to for a short rebuttal. At this time, I will open it up to committee questions. Representative Parsley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Mr. Johnson. It's nice to see you up here this morning. I missed your smiling face in 235 when we talked about 235.
A lot of people miss my smiling face, sir. Right. Yes, often.
Question, you said there were some housekeeping cleanups in the amendment and one substantive piece which moves the rebate from 2% to 2.75%. It would seem to me that another substantive piece in this is it moves the effective date of this from April to July. I guess I would like to know the administration's reasoning behind that and why that's in there.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes.
That was important to the administration, and that we think it makes it cleaner. You know, so many bills take effect on July 1, and we don't think there will be any wind projects that will be constructed in April or June of this year. If somebody's got some knowledge of a specific project that's likely to be constructed in South Dakota in April or June, we'd want to know about it. We're just not aware of any.
I think my question would be, it seems like the incentives are there to help us plan. And we did hear this morning that there is an RFP on the street. Is it your opinion that RFP won't be, the incentive won't be needed to be available before July in relation to that RFP?
If I might, Madam Chair, it seems to me, Representative Parsley, that once the bill passes, if it's passed and signed into law, that Excel or particular project developers will be able to take that tax structure that'll be in place, you know, before their project is operational, that they'll be able to take that as a given as they're doing their calculations, that it wouldn't need to be in place as they're doing their calculations.
Further questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson. On the question, if I may. Thank you. On the distribution of the tax dollars, 50% goes to the school district. Is that outside the formula? That's just extra money, right?
That's my understanding, but you know, I'm going to look to Mr. David Wiest from the Department of Revenue, and he's going to verify the reality of the situation.
He's shaking his head yes, so yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Follow-up. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess as I look through the amendment, I'm wondering what the actual impact is going to be. I see on the second page, I see that the department shall deposit into the Wind Energy Incentive Fund sufficient sales and use taxes imposed, etc., and contractors' excise taxes. I'm wondering what amount is sufficient. I see that it is continuously appropriated, so you know, this is the one whack that we'll have at asking some of these questions. And what are you anticipating? I didn't see any nice charts charted out or anything like that. So if you could, please.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, Representative Greenfield, I mean, you know, frankly, probably all the proponents are in error and that we didn't go back to step one. Right, and really explain from a big picture what is the bill doing. And so, you know, if I can be given just a minute of liberty to do so. You know, you have projects show up. You hope they show up. And they pay a couple of different taxes from an upfront perspective. They'd pay a 4% sales and use tax, and they'd pay a 2% contractor's excise tax. Now, they don't pay those taxes on all project costs. The rough math, and I will tell you it will vary from project to project, but the rough math would be that they would pay that sales and use tax on about 80% of a project, and that contractor's excise tax on only about 15% of a wind project. That's unusual to wind projects that the percentage is that low. But if you put those numbers together and you do the math, you find that you're probably paying around 3.5% of your, you know, you're paying 3.5% taxes on your project costs as defined in the bill. And so what the bill would seek to do is to take, you know, 2.75% of that. So most, but not all of the 3.5, and give it back to the project. Now, practically what that does is lower the effective tax rate. Sometimes people will talk about corporate welfare. Well, welfare is when you take money from, you know, Representative Cronin and you give it to Representative Westra. Representative Wester loves that, you know, because it's not his money. What this does is it takes 3.5 units from Representative Consett and gives her back 2.75. So it lowers the effective taxation rate. So what the second page of the amendment does is just talk about taking that 2.75, the estimated cost, the cost that have been validated through an affidavit by the project, and puts that 2.75 into the account, so that it can then be sent back to the project.
Well, this is, you know, this is something for obviously the bureaucrats to work out, but I'm wondering if this is going to create any money flow issues, any cash flow issues, because you're talking about significant dollars and cents, especially if you get more than one project seeking their incentive payment at the same time. I guess it just seems to me that, it seems to me that it's a question that needs to be answered, you know. I have another question, if I might, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. This is probably for, I don't know if it's for Mr. Johnson or Mr. Wiest, but as I read the first part of the amendment relative to page 7, it says that the department shall pay the incentive payment to the project owner within 90 days of the receipt of the affidavit for incentive payment. There's another reference to the 90-day period. And as I thought about that, I thought, you know, when somebody owes the government money, the government wants it right now. And when the government owes somebody else money, it's like, well, we'll get to it when we can. In the next paragraph, it says, it's talking about it being determined by the department that there's been an overpayment by the department. And it says that the excess incentive payment shall be paid back within 30 days. So exactly what I was talking about. And I guess I'm just, I don't know. I'm just wanting somebody to justify why it is that we always err on the side of government. You know, we never err on the side of
making things equal for the private sector, what have you. Can you comment, or would somebody else like to comment on the difference in the time frames there?
Madam Chair, perhaps I could take the cash flow question, and David Wiest could take the question about equity and the dates in the amendment, if that's all right. I would tell you, I think there are two, you know, first off, I should back up. This was really unusual, what the wind industry stepped forward to propose doing, because so often we hear about people wanting lower taxes or more incentives, and they don't propose any corresponding trade-off, right? They want more, and we understand that. But what the wind industry really did is step forward and say, hey, listen, the real barrier here is the upfront taxes. We are willing to pay you more taxes on the back end in the first 10 years after the project is functioning if you'll reduce our upfront tax barrier. There are just not very many times people will volunteer to pay more taxes on the back end if you give them something on the front end. But the wind industry did. And so that's a provision in the bill, as unamended before you, that it does talk about reducing. And it's sort of hidden in some of the language, so I think it's worth calling out that there was an old rebate provision in current law, and they're willing to do away with that, which will give local governments and state government more money over the first 10 years the project is functioning. And I think the industry is to be complimented for that. With regard to the cash flow specifically, Representative Greenfield, they don't get their money until the project is done. And because the taxes, both sales and use and contractors excise, are paid in real time as those services and goods are purchased, state government will have that money. And so it'll be, you know, a cash flow positive attribute for state government. And if we could have Mr. Wiest come up on the other, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Madam Chair. David Wiest, Department of Revenue. To answer your timing question, you kind of need a little context, and let me give it to you this way. If you go back to the old 10-45B large project refund system, that was a system that no one liked because it took a lot of work. You had to track costs and taxes in kind of a chronological basis. What we're aiming to do with this bill is we're trying to streamline the system for not only the taxpayer, the project owner, and also the department. And here's what I mean to say. We start with you file your application for a permit, giving us certain pieces of data. Then you get a permit. Then you finish your project. Then you file an affidavit at the end of your project, again, giving us certain pieces of data. And what we're aiming to try to do with the streamlining is that one of the pieces of data that you would provide is, here is my final project costs. Here, so, and I need to know that so I can multiply that times the 2.75%. And then also, here is the amount of taxes that I paid for sales, use, and contractors excise tax. We need to know that as well so we can kind of compare with the amount of refund that we're going to provide versus the amount of taxes we got in the door. So when we designed the system, we did it with the thought that a lot of the work is going to be streamlined for both the project owner and the taxpayer and the department. When we get to the affidavit for incentive payment, we put in there, Representative Greenfield, the 90-day payment, because quite honestly, we didn't know how long it would take after we would get the affidavit in the door to figure this stuff out, because it's relatively new. We anticipate that if it goes the way at least I'm thinking, and some of the staff at the Department of Revenue are thinking, that it's a deal where the affidavit for it comes in on a Monday, we look it over, if all of the proper information is there, that we could turn around and commence the process to have the electronic payment to the project owner by the end of that particular week. But we honestly don't know until we've done one of these kind of how it's going to shake out in the future, to be honest. So that's why we kind of took a 90-day period where it's kind of a wait and see. The second part is, you mentioned the 30-day period. And again, I don't know if there's any particular magic to the 30-day period. You know, what we think that may occur, you know, you always try to think of every possibility that is out there, but what we think that may occur is that what happens if we get a piece of information and, you know, like we make the incentive payment refund and then several weeks later we find an error. You know, we've made a miscalculation error or something, so we have to get, you know, $25,000 back. So we're trying to figure out the time period to get the $25,000 back. And in the bill right now, it's 30 days. Again, there's no particular magic to the 30-day time period. We're just kind of working out as we go forward what that would be. You know, maybe 30 days isn't reasonable in your view. Maybe it should be 60. Maybe it should be 60 for both. But we're just, you know, not having done one of these, you see, and having basically created a whole new system, it's kind of hard to troubleshoot the time periods as we sit here today. We did it with our best crack to start with. So that's a long explanation. I hope it kind of answers some of your questions.
Generally, if I might, Madam Chair.
Please.
You know, as I read it, and for anybody not, for anybody listening to this without the amendment right in front of them, it says if the department requests additional documents or information from the project owner, the 90-day period shall begin to run from the date of the receipt of the additional documentation or information. And, you know, I was envisioning this very arduous process. A person submits information. They after 70 days, they're asked for more information, and then the 90 days begins, you know, after they give that, after they submit that to the department, and so on and so forth. And I was seeing this cat and mouse game almost, where they're beginning to wonder, are we ever going to see our incentive payment? And I mean, it's just because of the way that that's drafted, it leaves. It leaves people like me who are suspicious of government activities and stuff, wondering what exactly is going on here. I do have one other question too. We've talked about it being determined by the department that the incentive payment was in excess of that which it should have been. I'm assuming that if it's determined that the state should have ponied up an additional $20,000 or something like that, that the people, that the project is out in the cold because they didn't file that. It talks about if something is not timely filed, and if it's not filed in a timely fashion, that they just forfeit any payments. I guess my question is, what if they determine, oh my gosh, we forgot to calculate this, or we overcalculated this, I'm sorry. What do we do then in that case where the department has been essentially, or where the state has been given a pass on some element, some level of dollars that are owed?
Madam Chair? Again, what we're aiming to do is try to come up with a streamlined system. And what we think, quite honestly, is we don't believe that there's going to be, getting back to your first point, a request for additional documentation. We think that the affidavit should have it all if it comes in the door the way we envision it. Okay, that's the answer to your first question. Continuing on, we believe that if there is a math mistake in the affidavit and we pay too much money out the door, okay, our burden is the legislature said, thou shalt give 2.75% of the project cost, so we have to go get that back. Now, you're on the other side. What happens if, you know, 4 months later or a year later, they say, oh, gosh, we forgot about this, and this could have been an additional project cost with more money? Again, the facts are in the possession of the project owner, and what we're doing is trying to push them as hard as we can so that when they file that affidavit, everything is on there and everything is correct, because they're the ones that have possession of the facts. So from our point of view, since they know what the facts are when they file the affidavit, and if they're all accurate, we should all be cranking out the refund payment as soon as possible, and we should all be on the same page.
Further questions on Senate Bill 195? Representative Parsley.
For Mrs. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
In your testimony this morning, Madam Chair, in your testimony this morning, you said that Senate Bill 235 was a little bit better than this bill because it had an emergency clause in it. Now, we see that the emergency clause was in this bill and has been removed. So are you of the position that it should be reinstated in this bill? Or
Madam Chair, Julie Johnson, absolutely Aberdeen. I was not a party to the discussion about changing the date in Senate Bill 195, so I don't know the rationale there. I know that as we were looking out for our wind energy elements in Northeast South Dakota, we did want to sync up as much of the restructuring of these payments to the production tax credit reauthorization. So I was not a party to that decision. I don't know what the factor there was.
If I could, for one of the developers. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kennedy, I think you made the statement that Xcel was coming forward with an RFP. Do you see this as an issue for the developers or not?
The emergency clause?
Emergency clause, yeah.
Madam Chair? I really don't see it as an issue, Representative Parsley. I would agree with the position I think Mr. Johnson stated, that as long as the developers have certainty and know what the policy is going to be, that the 90-day difference between April 1st and July 1st won't be significant. That would be my position. As long as you know what it's going to be, whether it goes into effect April 1st or July 1st shouldn't be an issue. Madam Chair, Representative, it's public. Xcel is looking for, I think, 200 megawatts of wind energy for their system, and it will be it's they may choose to build it or they may choose not to. It's clearly a significant development in wind energy in this region. There hasn't been an RFP of that size for at least a year and perhaps longer that I can recall. And that's, you know, a significant installation would be, you know, several hundred millions of dollars worth of wind energy to be put into the system here. Is that responsive?
Thank you. Further questions on Senate Bill 195 from the committee?
My question was that in your testimony, you mentioned something about the variance of the natural gas and wind generation made it more uninterruptible power source. Is that technology, has that even advanced recently, or has it just been applied for a while?
If I may, Madam Chair. Representative, that's a very good question. The reality of the intermittent nature of wind that's been in place, you know, since probably the first attempt to harness wind makes it a challenge from a utility standpoint, because when the, as you well are well aware, when the customer wants to have the lights come on, they want them to come on whether or not the wind is blowing. So the ability to partner with another source of energy and have that that's quickly dispatchable to back up or firm up wind is essential, and I realize you realize this, but for the people listening and other members of the committee, because of the nature of natural gas and the way that it is used as a generating source, natural gas is quickly dispatchable. You can quickly fire up a natural gas turbine. So if you're in a spot where you need the electricity that you would probably first like to see come from the wind farms, it's not available, then you can fire up the natural gas generators. Other sources of energy, such as coal, nuclear, simply aren't as readily and quickly dispatched as natural gas is. So that's why you have a very good partnership, and pretty much they end up going, I won't say it's quite megawatt for megawatt, but it's pretty close to where you're going to need a match of that. And a good example is in South Dakota. Basin Electric put in a large-scale wind farm in the Crow Lake area, and almost immediately after that, was christening a new large natural gas plant near White, South Dakota. And it makes a lot of sense to partner with that so that you make sure that you have the backup. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions for the committee on Senate Bill 195? Seeing none, the chair now closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 195 and opens it up for committee discussion and or action. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment 195JC.
It's been moved by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Parsley to amend 195JC on House Bill 195. Those in favor signify by saying, oh, sure, Representative Rounds. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I appreciate the answers to the questions that were given. Bears more discussion on the time frames that are discussed relative to page 7. But generally speaking, the amendment puts the bill in pretty fair shape, and I would encourage everybody to vote for it. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Further comments? Seeing none, those in favor of amending Amendment 195JC will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We have amended House Bill 195. Representative Parsley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Senate Bill 195 as amended do pass.
Could I get a motion on the... Well, either way. Okay, so we are going to move forward. We have... I was going to... Representative Kirschman, second. It has been moved do pass on House or Senate Bill 195. Discussion.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill in its original form was an important bill. I think it's been improved now with the amendments. You heard me raising questions about the nature of the timing. I'm comfortable as long as the developers are comfortable with a July timing on this. I do think that two of the improvements that were made in this, or two of the amendment pieces, are great improvements. One is making it a more robust incentive. Clearly, that's going to help us in our position. But I also think deleting all of the different categories for size were beneficial. I think people could get lost in the minutiae of some of that stuff. So I really do compliment the drafters of the amendment. I don't have quite the concern that my good friend from Clark has on the timing issues. I do think that's part of what we deal with all the time on these incentive rebates today in our when we have rebates on contractors' excise tax or on sales tax. So I feel confident actually in this streamlined program that it's actually going to be easier for the department to make those things work. So I urge your support of SB 195 as amended. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Further comments? Seeing no further discussion, the question at hand is do pass on Senate Bill 195. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kamak.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye.
Stalzer.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Consett.
Aye.
And Solem.
Aye.
We had 13 yeas.
Motion do pass on House or Senate Bill 195 as amended. Passes. That's what we're going to do. Representative Greenfield, questions on the title?
I move Title Amendment 195 JTC.
It has been moved by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Solem. The motion made is the Title Amendment 195 JTC. Those in comments? If those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We have amended the title on 195. Now I will turn the gavel back over.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. The last item on our agenda today is Senate Bill 157. Senate Bill 157 is an act to revise the distribution from the Wind Energy Tax Fund. And with that, I'll open up proponent testimony to Senate Bill 157. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the House Commerce Committee.
Welcome to House Commerce.
Well, it's nice to be back. Sat in the Cronin's chair, so Cronin's taken good care of my seat when I previously served on the committee. I'm State Senator Chantel Krebs, representing District 10, Renner, South Dakota. Senate Bill 157, I'm just going to briefly describe to you, is and has been a work in progress. Alongside, actually, I think it was the brilliant idea of 157 that brought forth 195, so we can take some credit and laugh about that. But 195, Section 16 specifically, is really 157. And so the results of your successful support of 195 tells me then that 157 can have its due process as it's had, but at the same time being a tabling motion would be in effect and okay with me, just because we have and are moving along the conversation of energy, specifically funding for townships and support with it for the townships. But we want to make sure that Section 16, as you had heard, in 195 stays separate and relevant and alive. So, Mr. Chair, with that being said, I'll let you do your diligence.
Thank you, Senator. And with that, I think there's no other comments necessary, and I would entertain a motion. Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to table Senate Bill 157.
The motion to table Senate Bill 157 by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Rounds. It's a non-debatable motion, and I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Comeck,
aye.
Cronin,
aye.
Greenfield,
aye.
Kirschman,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Nelson,
aye.
Parsley,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rounds,
aye.
Stalzer,
aye.
Westra,
aye.
Consett,
aye.
And Solem.
Aye.
We have 13 yeas, excuse me.
Having received a majority of the vote of the members elect, Senate Bill 157 has been tabled. That concludes our House Commerce business. Representative Consett.
I feel the need to point out that we have 13 committee members here and only 12 pieces of jerky, so every man for themselves.
Representative Parsley.
In deference to Representative from Rapid City, she can have my piece. I don't want to hurt her when I'm trying for that.
Upon further examination, I see the box has previously been opened. And if I could have one of the pages ensure that there is enough in the box, and if you'd like to just pass one out to everyone. Representative Brown?
Should there not be enough, can we force Senator Johnson to come back and testify in front of the committee?
We'll see here in just a moment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Greenfield?
I'd be willing to forego my piece of jerky today if we could ensure that Senator Johnston does pony up a jumbo for me in the future.
Kind of like a two-for-one deal, a little trading material going on. As I had mentioned last week, we wanted to finish up today and discuss summer study. And I know you've all had a form to fill out. Did anyone here have any ideas for summer study work that you'd like to discuss with the committee? A study on the various sizes of beef jerky, perhaps? I'm not certain. Representative Rounds.
If I may, it's an issue that has come up a lot over the past, my past 8 years, and I think the past couple of years, that I don't know if we've seen a lot of it in this committee, would be a study of the three-tiered system for the distribution of alcohol in South Dakota. We've had a number of bills come in this year, and in past years. It's a suggestion, something to talk about. Other states have moved away from it. It's why don't we just have a study on the alcohol sales in the state of South Dakota about 3 or 4 years ago, but somewhere down the line, we need to take a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rounds. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The study that I would like to propose is seems to be an ever-growing issue in the legislature in South Dakota would be the study of the economic impact of illegal immigration here in South Dakota.
Very good. Good. Thank you, Representative. Representative Peterson, did you have anything? Any other summer studies? We're all good? Awesome. Very good. Representative Konzen. Oh, sorry. Please. Representative Greenfield.
Given two of the more spirited debates that we had in this committee, perhaps we should conduct a summer study, commission a summer study on whether there will be free access by the media to any mixed martial arts competitions.
Burning 85 octane gasoline on a snowmobile. Would you mind writing that up, Representative?
You bet I'll take care of that.
Okay, very good. The last item of business is... I'm sorry?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh. Yes, go ahead.
A comment, if I may.
Please, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you. You have done an excellent job of conducting this committee. In the 11 years that I've been here, you have been one of the fairest and one of the most patient chairmen that I have ever had the pleasure of serving with. You've done an excellent job, and as a member of the minority, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. I appreciate that. And we got the job done in the designated amount of time. And that threat or promise thing we had, okay, I take that back. Okay. Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, I second that, Representative Peterson. However, you're not the minority. We are, aren't we, Representative?
I think that was a gender based.
It was, definitely.
Okay.
We thought that the suggestions for summer studies there at the end would be a wonderful collage for this committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate your kind comments. Last item, we've had a couple of our team members here that have been pretty quiet throughout this whole process, and I think our LRC staff has done just an outstanding job for us here. They've kept us on the straight and narrow. Dan has just been a real trooper getting all the paperwork out. Doug, we appreciate your wisdom and expertise in our committee, and with that, I'd like to give them both a hand. Very good. And we do have a token of our appreciation, and it's not a 12-pack of Bud Light, certainly, but please accept our gratitude. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
You bet. That concludes our business for the House Commerce and Energy Committee for this term, unless we should happen to have some sort of a conference or somebody wants to bring back a bill, and I would certainly let you all know when the time comes. But other than that, that's the end of our business for this particular year, and I would entertain that motion. That motion to adjourn by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Condit. All in favor of the adjournment will say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, we are adjourned.